the coup that's about to fall that's on the planet. The sky is falling, ain't no need to panic. I got a stick and one jump automatic. Compatible, creative in the air that we are. The coup is about to fall that's on the planet. The sky is falling, ain't no need to panic. I got a stick and one jump automatic. Compatible, creative in the air.
I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is your damn right. Guys, thank you so much for the support we've received. We were the top 10 this week on Podomatic. I believe we're probably doing pretty well on iTunes as well. The one thing that I can ask for you guys that requires very little time or effort on your part, leave us a comment. Let us know what you were listening for. Not only will it help us and help us promote ourselves, but it will also help us in creating content for you. We don't, I know that we have been doing well for our standards, but I don't know if you're here to listen to How to Get Away with Murder, or all of it, or you want to hear about Supergirl, or you love our leftovers discussion, or you hate it, whatever. I want to know why you're here. So please leave us a comment. Share, subscribe, any of that would be great too. You want to get into How to get Away with Murder, Ash?
Sure.
Two birds, one millstone. What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good. We found out more people are involved with the shooting of Keating. I kind of enjoyed the not necessarily the story of the trial of the murder of the week, but I did enjoy that the client, like the first, like soon as she killed her husband, like the first thing she did was call Annalise. So
Annalise is getting in the habit of like having really stupid clients. Though this is the second one in a row who like said some shit with Annalise sitting right there. Or maybe, like, this second out of third that, like, to law enforcement, or that she never, ever, like, when she told the cop, like, you'll be next. Like, what was that?
Right? It's like, what the fuck
is wrong? Your lawyer is right there. Like, do not speak unless your lawyer instructs you to. I feel like most people know that. So I almost feel like this is a stupid, like, plot device to create some doubt as to whether Annalise will succeed. Because we know, like, if the client doesn't fuck it up, Annalise will succeed. So, like, the only way to create doubt for the viewer is to present a fuck-up client.
Yeah, I guess it's heightened emotion, you know. But that was a stupid fucking thing to say. It's like, what? No, shut the fuck up. Like,
really? If I was Annalise, I would have walked away then, like, find a new lawyer. Like, oh.
I know, I was like, you know what? I'm done. Like, you just fucked up.
One of my biggest takeaways was a textual one. I think the show depicts, and probably in a realistic way, that, like, people, especially, like, Nate and Asher in this episode, people who desperately need the validation of being called, like, a, quote, good person, they will pass the blame to someone else or anyone else so they don't have to feel that weight on their shoulders of the decisions that they made. Like, Nate blaming Annalise for everything they did, like, she didn't hold a gun to that motherfucker's head. Like, he wanted to sleep with somebody other than his wife, and now it's all her fault. I mean, come on.
Only thing I would blame Annalise for in that situation is the fact that she did frame him for murder.
That's not what he's on about. He's on about, like, you took away my relationship with my wife. No, she didn't.
Like,
you did.
Like, you was fucking, so, like, your wife was dying, and you decided to fuck Annalise. That's your fault. Yeah. You did dirty.
And we had two people tell Annalise this week, by the way, that, like, she's incapable of having, like, loving relationships, which is pretty harsh. Pretty harsh.
Yeah, well, she kind of is a terrible person, so.
Really? I disagree with that. Why is she a terrible person?
She just, like, destroys everything. Like, she just be destroying people. And
who has she destroyed?
She destroyed
Asher's father. I'll give you that one.
Yeah. And
but
then,
that,
like,
dude had it coming.
But the thing, like, yeah, he did. But it's like, she's going against, like, people's, like, she, like, made a deal with Asher to, like, never, like, bring that up. Like, why would, I get what she was doing. You know, you gotta do what you gotta do. But She's being inconsiderate. Okay, I'll just say inconsiderate.
Okay, she is inconsiderate. I'll grant you that. I don't think she's a terrible person. I'll say inconsiderate.
She's not nice.
Okay, but, you know, I mean...
Fine, I'll say that.
Not nice, but, like, I don't necessarily want my lawyer to be nice. I want him to be good.
Yeah, but don't, like, pretend to care about me and do some fucked up shit. That's all I'm saying.
I think she actually does care about them, though. Bonnie and the kids and Frank. Like, I think she actually does care.
She may, but she still do fucked up shit to them.
Well, she may do fucked up shit to them, but she also, they would be pretty fucked without her at times, too. So, I don't know.
That's true, but she still does fucked up things to them.
I don't know. I guess this is something we fundamentally disagree on, because we've talked about this before in relation to another television show. Like, I feel like your goods can outweigh your bads to the point that your bads don't really matter. Like, if you do enough shit...
It don't matter.
Why?
They shape who you are. Just because you do a bunch of... Like, I'm not saying, like, it should be held over your head for... But no, Annalise, you can't even tell me that her good outweighs her bad.
I think they do. Like, she... What has she done that's so terrible? You haven't told me yet.
Move on. I was actually
thinking you could
put me up. Shut up.
All right.
The shit that she do.
Okay, tell me this. We'll transition it to a Bonnie discussion. How do you feel about Annalise finally giving Bonnie credit for something, except it's not actually something Bonnie did?
Yes. I was like, oh, now you're a credit for something that she's like...
I mean, she felt like she needed to boost Bonnie's ego there, and I think she knows that she doesn't want Bonnie to know what she really did, obviously, but...
Bonnie almost had a fucking, like, mental breakdown last episode. She gotta do something, you know.
Is Bonnie your favorite character on the show?
No, Annalise is.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, considering you just said she was a ton of words.
Well, I love Annalise. She is my favorite. She's probably one of my favorite characters, like, on TV right now, period. And I just feel bad for Bonnie.
Bonnie is my favorite character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I find her very interesting. I find her story compelling. I find, she's so fragile emotionally, but in, like, a real way that she can still seem composed to most people. And, yeah, I do feel bad for her. Like, she's sort of... Even though she is a murderer, she still seems like an innocent somehow.
Yeah. Sympathetic murderer.
Yeah. Last week we talked about how much different the last 15 minutes tend to feel, and How to Get Away with Murder is structured so that the most compelling and interesting parts and the parts that are filmed cinematically with the interspersing scenes and the montages come at the end, usually, sometimes at the very beginning, or at the beginning or the end. I think we can forget my idea that we just make an entire show like this. It's what I want, but it ain't happening. Should they keep us on our toes more, though? Should they, like, should occasionally, like, we get a flash-forward scene in the middle of an episode? Do they always have to be at the beginning and the end?
I mean, I get why they do it, although I do think...
Yeah, they do it because it's the two best parts of the show. They're like, here, watch this. Here's some shit about a transgender woman killing her husband. Now we get some more stuff.
I don't know, because, I mean, it's smart the way they're doing it, because you have to watch the whole episode, in a sense.
I almost feel like I could, if I wasn't doing this for our pod, like I could just watch the beginning and then like fast forward 40 minutes and watch the end and I'd be good.
But then you miss all the hints and seeds throughout the episodes.
I suppose. I'm not, I don't think any of us have any idea what actually has happened so far, so I'm not sure which one it is.
It's one of those things like, when you finally get up to that point, you'll have to rewatch, the whole first season to realize what the hints and seeds actually are. That type of thing.
Speaking of the first season, how does this season, I think we're like six episodes in now, how does this season so far compare with the first season to you? At least with the first, through the five or six episodes.
I think this one is better. I'll say it's kind of better in the sense that there's more depth to the characters and the way there's more story between the characters. So it pushes the story forward, as well as doing references to the last season. So it's a lot more that's going on, and it's a big story that's going on right now. It wasn't before last season, you know, in the first half. It was just, you know, we mainly was just worried about the flash forwards and stuff.
Right.
So,
I'll build on that. I think what television does extremely well is instead of, like, when television is executed well, and there are shows that are executed better than How to Get Away with Murder, but it's executed well enough to qualify here. When television is executed well, it's not like something, like a film is basically like a car racing toward a wall, and it's going to get to that end, and there's going to, should, and at some point there's going to be like a big collision, and and you have to brace yourself. Television is more like spread out, and it builds on top of itself. And it's almost like the building of a pyramid until you get to a certain point, and then there's usually a tipping point. But How to Get Away with Murder is still fairly early in that pyramid building, but it has built like a surface now that we have in-jokes, and we have references to characters' past behavior. And as long as there's consistency there, and as long as it's well-executed, which How to Get Away with Murder is, if nothing else, a well-executed television show, like, I do think it is building on the first season. And I think that the whodunit behind the is a little more compelling right now because Annalise is in the hospital, and we know she's probably going to live. If there's going to be a season three, Annalise lives. It's still more compelling to me than Who Killed the Professor ever was. I did enjoy also, like, a couple other things about this episode. Specifically, the ambiguity of some of the minor characters the show presents. I mean, there's ambiguity in all the characters, but I like that even the minor characters have that sense of ambiguity. We don't know the relative guilt of the trans woman or the adopted kids, and to some extent, it doesn't matter. It makes the proceedings more intriguing that we don't really know the relative guilt of these people.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, you know, there's a lot of, ambiguity with a lot, like, every character. So they make them more compelling. Like, there's not one character that's, like, all good and one character that's all bad.
No, and we just proved that by debating Annalise's merits. How do you feel? Are you feeling any differently about Frank or Laurel by now?
I actually kind of want to yell at Frank.
He's a very good manipulator, right? He made Exhibit A, like, he made her feel badly, even though she was right. Like, he's learned from Annalise.
I love that he did that, but no, the thing that bothered me, and maybe just me personally, you don't just pull a surprise, you're meeting my family, on someone that you're sort of dating. Like, that is something that would probably make me run for the fucking hills and never speak to the kid. Like, if we're kind of dating, like, I get why he did it, to make him seem, humanize him some more, not just this,
And it seemed to work for him. I mean, obviously, if he was dating you, then it wouldn't have worked. But, like, for Laurel, and maybe he knew Laurel well enough to know this, like, it seemed to be effective. It seemed to be...
It was just so well... I don't, like, dude...
How many people were in that damn house?
I'm assuming it was a pre-planned dinner, but that's what I'm assuming.
Either that, or they're all living on bunk beds.
Oh god,
packed in a prison.
That would have freaked me out. I was like, can you let me know ahead of time? You're like, what if I was wearing booty shorts or something? Because I thought we was going clubbing or something. No, you just took
is
me
it,
to your parents.
I don't see Laurel ever doing that. But
Yeah, I'm just saying, well, me either, but I'm just saying, like, what? It's like, no, don't do that. Like,
but before we get to favorite scenes, we touched on Laurel. Let's talk about one other member of the gang quickly. Does Michaela seem different to you now that she's finally achieved her... her goal?
Well, yeah, she kind of gotta do.
She's like a new person. She's very aggressive, and she was like vicious toward Wes. I liked it.
And you liked it,
John? Of course I did.
Well, now Levi is in jail. She's free again.
Yeah. So she, her ex went to jail, so now she's just gonna date the guy on trial for murder. So I mean, he's out on bail, so he's a lot better.
But yeah, it's
Have we seen the last of Levi?
I don't think so. I think he's coming back. He has to.
I would think. That would just be sort of really abrupt if that was the end of that character arc. So do you have a favorite scene for Two Birds, One Millstone?
I'll probably have to say the flash forward. No. I was going to the Annalise and Wes thing, because it was so weird. Like, it threw me off.
It is a fascinating relationship.
It's like, what the fuck is going on? And, you know, there's always been that theory that Wes is Annalise's kid or some shit.
He was adopted, I don't think that's possible after this episode.
Because he was from Haiti, right?
It's like my mom sacrificed everything to get me to this country, so I don't really see how he could be Annalise.
It's so
I mean, there's something way too sexual about it to. I mean,
yeah, like, some people thought they was gonna, like, kiss or something. That feels like, this is so fucking weird. Like, what the? Oh my gosh, that relationship is like.
There is something. I personally think there's something in Annalise's past we don't know about that makes her cling so tightly to Wes. Like, maybe she had a son or had, like, a brother that was like Wes or something, and she lost. I don't know. There has to be some reason, though, that she just picked that kid out of class and was like, you know, I'm going to treat him like, you know, my one true love.
Something so weird about it. Oh, gosh.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The thing with Wes, he has a terrible poker face.
He has a terrible face in general. I kind of agree with Michaela. He ruins everything. Go away, Wes.
Yes, it's like, dude, chill the fuck out. Like, why are you still obsessing over Rebecca? Dude, worry about your classes. You are a weightless kid. Like, you live
in a shitty ass. In Wes's defense, even though I just bashed him, he was, like, basically in love with Rebecca. So, I mean, can't fault him too much for trying to investigate her disappearance.
I mean, I get that. But, like, don't drag me down with that shit. Like, people got, like, worry about your classes, Wes, right now. Then you can worry about. That's all I'm saying.
Take a semester off, man. I mean. I'm gonna have to say that closing scene, especially the editing in that final scene that, like, blurred together. It blurred together the deaths of Rebecca and the adopted Asian chick at one point, and that was just really neat. And I'm not sure exactly what to make of it yet, but I like that I can remember it and I don't know exactly what to make of it. Go ahead.
I'm thinking that maybe Annalise may be in on her own.
It definitely seems that way at this point.
I'm thinking that maybe either she's orchestrated it, or she was trying to orchestrate something, and like
something has been orchestrated.
Like, clearly, or like someone flipped the script on her while she was trying to orchestrate something else.
Yeah.
And it was like two things at once.
We will 2 weeks until the killer is announced, so we will get to that soon. We do How to Get Away with Murder here every week, so join us back next week. Alright, Ash, so Devil's Night. What do you think of the concept of Devil's Night, of all these ghosts of serial killers past?
I actually thought it was really neat, because, you know, it definitely plays on to, you know, the horror genre, but it's also, you know, things that really happen, and it's like tying all these serial killers to this one guy, and they all, like, have, like, a dinner, an annual dinner, to, like, just, I guess, reminisce and just, it was very crazy, but I enjoyed the concept of it.
I enjoyed the concept of it if they had kept it. My favorite scene, I'll go ahead and say it, was when Sally woke John up and convinced him he was hallucinating, because for a minute, I thought American Horror Story might play with, like, subtlety and uncertainty in a way it really hasn't since Murder House. And, like, of course not. They're going to show us that, of course, this whole thing was real and these ghosts are here. And I don't know. It reminds me of high-concept comic books. Like, there are these, lots of these comic books that come out, and they're like, whoa, that's a really cool idea. And this was a really cool idea. But it sounds so much better in the pitch room than it is on actuality, unless the right person is steering the ship. Like, if Joss Whedon had made this episode of television, it would have been fascinating. As it was just like, why are John Wayne Gacy and fucking the monster woman from Florida here together? They just all happened to stop by this hotel, and now they're dancing together. They also all get along. Like, these people are all borderline sociopaths, and they're borderline psychotics. Like, there's a good chance they're not all gonna get along just because they have the same hobby. I don't
like, I'm a better serial killer than you, and shit, like, egos.
I liked the vibe, I don't know that, and this is the thing about American Horror Story, it's the unique thing about American Horror Story in general, is it has entire scenes that, they're not meant to serve plot or characters, and that's why grading it, or talking about it in the way we talk about other shows, doesn't always work. It will sacrifice the interest of both characters and plot to serve for style and tone. It's more interested in like making you feel a certain way than in telling a story or developing characters. And that's really frustrating sometimes. But I understand what it's doing, but it doesn't function with the same logic that other shows do. So it's really hard to compare it into other shows, and it's really hard to... It's almost like an impressionist painting versus, you know, a realism painting. It's like looking at Monet and then looking at Da Vinci. I mean, like, which one's better? Well, Da Vinci's has way more detail and looks way more specific, but that's not what Monet was trying to do in the first place, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. One thing I am fascinated by for the future episodes, and I really hope we see, is interaction between March and the Countess. Like, they both exist within this hotel, but we haven't seen them even, like, cross each other's path yet. Like, what is their dynamic, I wonder?
Yeah, and I thought maybe we was going to get it this episode. I was like, oh, she didn't get an invite. That sucks, considering, like, she's, like...
yeah, really, she's got it classified. She's killed tons of people.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, is she supposed to be based on a... I don't think she's supposed to be based on a real person. So
no, but in the world of the show, she is a real person.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for them to, like, interact somehow, because these are, like, two very, you know, old people who's been living in this hotel.
Yeah, she's probably been
like,
here, like, basically ever since it was built.
Yeah.
At least since the 70s.
Yeah. Disco Gaga.
Is it weird that I barely noticed Gaga? Like, the marketing was built around her, but, you know, I barely even notice her acting, and sometimes even the character sort of fades into the background.
Yeah. Like I say, you know, sharing the screen, you know, I think because, you know, she was a big star and everything, and they had to hype her up because, you know, Jessica Lange wasn't here. So they had to, you know, they're going to lose.
Count me as, like, somebody who will trade Gaga for Jessica Lange back any day. Like, I won't even think about that. That's something I'll do in a heartbeat. Also, give me Michael Chiklis back instead. Hell, bring back Connie Britton. Like, but.
Well, she's. Got her own other show.
So. Nashville? Really? I'm pretty sure it's getting canceled. She can come back.
Well, maybe eventually. But
no, it's got terrible ratings right now. Like, this is the last season of Nashville. So let's talk about the Chloe Savini, Alex Lowe mother storyline for a minute.
Yeah.
We bemoaned, sort of, the fact that the kidnapping scene was meaningless back in, like, episode one, because we didn't know any of the people involved.
Yeah.
Now we do, and we see the scene again. Did it feel any more impactful for you this time?
Not necessarily. I kind of felt bad
either.
For the dad, because I felt bad for the dad because it was like, all he did was turn for like 1 second.
Why did he, I don't understand how she got the kid to come away with her. I don't, it didn't really make sense.
I don't know. I guess she's an alluring person. I don't
know. Did she glamour him? Did she glamour him? Do they have true blood rules?
I don't know. Well, it seems like it. She's been doing it to people, you know, since the first episode, you know, with the couple and, you know, the producer, movie guy and stuff like that. So maybe that's what happened.
Maybe so. Alex Locum strapped though. She was like pulled out her 9 in like 5 seconds. She's like, I don't know what you are, but I'll shoot the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
I appreciated that about her.
Yes.
Apparently she's going to be a vampire now though, so I guess she doesn't need the gun. I don't know. The most interesting thing about this storyline to me, is it morally acceptable, in your opinion, and this is an opinion, I suppose, to definitively, clearly love one child more than the other? Is it okay? Like, is she a bad mother for loving one kid more?
I don't think she's a bad mother, because you can't control your emotions, but it is kind of a fucked up thing, the fact that she did choose her son over her her daughter. That girl has nobody now. Her dad is going crazy in a fucking hotel.
That grandma making cakes or some shit.
Yeah, it's like she's chilling with grandma now. It's like,
well, she's probably better off. I mean, I don't know what grandma's situation is, but she's probably not a vampire or hanging out with serial killers. So,
like, I feel bad for that look. I kind of want to. That's probably why she's all fucked up in the head. Like, her mom is just like traumatized.
The girl seems way less fucked up than her parents.
That's true, but it's like, like the way she, like, was it last episode, the way she was telling the story about her brother, it was kind of like she thought nothing of it. And it was like, you don't think this is fucking weird what you're saying?
It's almost like what we talk about with Jill in The Leftovers, like her idea of normalcy is just fucked up because like these are her parents. Like, of course she thinks seeing her missing brother 2 years later is just, you know, day in the park. That, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't have a ton on Devil's Night. It was what it was. It was mostly about mood and feeling and that sort of, like, eerie, something might happen, aren't you shocked to see Jeffrey Dahmer eating somebody thing going on.
Yeah.
Not a lot. To me, it wasn't the most rich textual episode. Do you have anything else we need to talk about for Devil's Night?
I'm thinking why the detective was invited. I'm thinking that he may be the Ten Commandments killer.
You think?
Yeah, I'm starting to.
I did not think of that would be a nice twist. I didn't. It makes sense in a way, except that he was on the. Unless my only problem with the theory right now is that he was on the phone with the Ten Commandments killer, and we heard the voice. So the only way to explain that away is to be like, oh, we were actually in his point of view, and he was having a delusion to where he was hearing the voice, but. You know, I don't know why we would have been in his point of view, because it never does. I mean, we haven't established that at any other point. I don't know.
That's true. With
American Horror Story, I don't doubt it, though. That could totally be feasible. I still, by the way, love Hypodermic Sally. She's like a weekly highlight.
Yeah, I love her character.
Yeah, we need more of her and less of less serial killers and less vampires, personally. That's just my opinion. All right, did you have a favorite scene before we move on?
Favorite scene was probably I'll just go with the serial killer's like banquet or whatever. I'll go with that.
Okay, the serial killer banquet. The greatest killers of our generation is
Yeah, what do they call the Mount Rushmore of serial
a
killers?
murder or something, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, next week we'll be back in the spot with AHS and Scream Queens. Should be back after the fall classic. I suppose we'll get back to Scream Queens if as long as Ash, do you want to? I'll put you on the spot. I'm 50-50 on it, so I'm gonna leave it up to you.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we came this far.
We came this far. We might as well finish the first season. All
Yeah.
right, so we'll be back next week with HS and Scream Queens. All right, we're going to move on to the leftovers. Ash, I love this week's Leftovers episode. How did you feel about
I really loved it too. It was very compelling. I love
Let
the
me tell you
so
something before we get started. Ghost
like
Patty's husband, he liked to get shit on, Ash. He liked to
yeah.
get shit on. He was
Oh
into
my
some kinky shit, Ash. Literally.
I love how Kevin just paused when she said it. It's like you have to pause when someone says some shit like that. No pun intended. But it was like, what?
Yeah. It
I
was
love how
really intense, wasn't it? The episode, though? I mean.
I love how offended Patty was that the fact that he never asked her to shit on him.
Personally, I would defend her husband and say, like, that's the kind of thing you do go to a hooker for. Like, that's not what you want your
Yeah.
wife doing. But,
Yeah,
you
you
know. I don't know. I mean, Patty's like, why is her shit better than mine, I guess. I don't know. We're really, really, not. The first thing I want to address, the show is fundamentally different than anything else we watch. It's not
Yeah.
trying to build tension or suspense like Fargo or How to Get Away with Murder, or it's not trying to, it doesn't have like the soapy drama that Empire has. The chief purpose is not to be on the edge of your seat. It's trying to, and succeeding, to portray these vulnerable characters and ask questions about grief and loss and unexplainable. And it works as a real, because even though there's like the unexplainable in the Leftovers universe, which doesn't exist in ours, there are still
Yeah.
unexplainable problems for spiritual people in our universe. Like, the problem of an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-good God is something that Christians have struggled with since the Roman Empire. Like, how can there possibly
Yeah.
be a perfect God with e when evil exists in the world? Either he doesn't have the power to stop it, he doesn't know about it, or he knows about it and he doesn't, and he could stop it, and he just doesn't care. So there are these unexplainable problems for people of faith and people of science, and that we
Yeah.
still in the real world get to. And I don't know. I think these parallels for the show are great. Was this episode more intense to you than past episodes?
Yeah, because it was, you had the whole thing with Kevin, like is he gonna get caught, with the whole handprint and
Yeah.
everything, and his phone, and then you got the tension with him and what's that name?
John.
Huh?
John Murphy.
Oh yeah. And it was just the whole, everybody at this point is kind of tense because the whole town is tense, because
Yeah,
three
everybody's on
girls.
edge.
Yeah.
I mean, good God, Kevin. Okay, John picks him up in his car, his truck after after Ghost Patty has already warned him about getting into the car. He gets in the
Yeah.
truck anyway, and John's drinking and driving him out of town, not telling him
Yeah,
anything. And what does Kevin do? Not shit. Kevin is the most like reactive character ever. He is also like clearly depressed too. Is that's the kind of shit depressed people do?
yeah.
He doesn't do anything or say much of anything at all until he gets a chance to react. Which is why even though he may be a worse person, John is definitely a better character because he's out there John's out there trying to kill people and burn houses down, and like Kevin's just along for the ride, man. If John wasn't here, Kevin would just be chilling at the house, hoping not to talk to his ghost anymore.
Sleepwalking and shit, trying to drown himself.
But like all the other characters do things, when Kevin gets really upset, do you remember what he does? He punches walls. That's his big move.
Drama queen.
But yeah, fucking John's going around murdering people in the middle of the night based on a hunch. Like, you know, let's talk about the Ghost Patty conundrum. Here's the thing about Ghost Patty. If what she is saying is true, if she is to be believed, then two things we previously discussed are true. We talked about Kevin's relationship to Nora and the baby just being a reaction, and how they just literally showed up on his front door, and he never really wanted them, and Patty says that same thing to him. We also talked about how Kevin, like, sort of wanted to die. We had a conversation about how, like, suicidal people parallel his attempts to get caught with the body and, like, get sent to prison, but he couldn't pull the trigger. It may be subconsciously he can. The only problem is, I don't know if Patty is reliable or if she. It's entirely possible she's just like Kevin's worst instincts realized.
I think she may be like, I guess it's subconscious. Like, he knows all this, but he's not consciously thinking that way.
She
I
could
think.
be. She could absolutely be like the literal representation of his baggage, of his ghost. But, like, you remember when she tells him, don't get in that car? That was before John ever pulled up. How could he? I mean, there are things that point to the fact that she may actually be supernatural. Especially, it seems almost like a real ghost story now. Especially when she's like, she told him, you got lucky and framed a guy without even knowing it. How could Kevin have done that? And at the end, that guy said, who's your friend? Like, he had to be talking.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I mean, it seems there are things in this episode that make it seem to me like Ghost Patty is real. So the question then becomes, is she actually real, or is she his demons? And then, if she is real, does that mean everything she says is true? Because she could be real and still be full of shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
Oh
she was a guilty remnant person. I mean, but if she is real and she is telling the truth, this seems like, and she says that the girls are departed. This is an episode, instance of the show actually giving answers and not just more questions. Again, if you
Yeah.
believe Patty. So, I don't know. Fucking Patty. Regina King is very good. I don't think that's breaking news, but she's very good. I like her character a lot, and especially the scene where she was trying to, where she was explaining why Evie wouldn't have done anything to hurt anybody or get
Yeah.
hurt, and she was exceptional. And it's a fa she's a fascinating character to me, Erica is, because she seems really strong and passionate, but she's also just like perfectly accepting of whatever her family does. Like, oh, you got shot tonight? Okay, well, come on over, I'll patch you up.
It's like, how are you so calm about something like this? Like, your husband burned down a fucking
Yeah, when he
house.
burned down the house, she was just like, well, I guess he started tonight. Oh, well, that's what he did.
It was like, her character is, I won't say calm, but well, I guess on the
Oh,
surface she comes off very
she
calm.
comes off very calm. I think you might be hitting on something with the surface. I think underneath she may
Yeah,
have.
John is the more passionate one out of the
He's definitely fiery. He's
two.
literally, the puns are just
Literally.
coming from everywhere tonight. So there, this episode seemed to be a commentary on uncertainty. If you think about Nora was absolutely certain, according to her conversation with Jill, that this was a one-time only thing. The departure happened; it'll never happen again. The ship, Noah's Ark, is coming on. Yet, when she woke up and Kevin wasn't there, she freaked the fuck out.
Oh my God.
So I don't think she's that certain.
Yeah.
Similarly, John is absolutely certain he knows what happened to Evie until he's just looks like he's absolutely wrong. And then Little Murphy seems absolutely certain that she is departed, but he has absolutely no proof. It's just so people think they're certain about things, or they want to feel certain about things, so they talk it up. But really, there's a level of uncertainty behind all of these characters.
They're tired of the question marks.
Yeah,
It's
they are.
just
So if Damon Lindelof won't give them any answers, they'll just answer the questions themselves. I thought Nora's religious analogy seemed to point out that she thought it was spiritually related, but it's like the exact opposite that her brother, the priest, always talks about. Like, so I thought that was weird because her brother is a spiritual leader who is all co going all around talking about how this was not a spiritual happening. By the way, also him being so certain that his wife, like that whole story about she woke up, that sounded like a dream to me.
And it talks for hours.
And then they went back to sleep, and he woke up again, and she was just like she had always been. That sounds exactly like some sort of vivid fever dream. That does not sound like so. I mean, but he's certain that it occurred again. Certainty. How do you feel about seeing the same scenes repeated from different points of view?
I actually like it because it gets some form of, answers, and it does move the story forward. It answers some questions, although it kind of opens up more. So,
I think
yeah.
that's always going to be the case. I don't think
Yeah.
that's ever going to just answer questions. I agree. I like it. It reminds me a lot of Hannibal. I don't know if you ever watched Hannibal, but late season
Yeah.
2, early season 3 of Hannibal was basically obsessed with that. Like, it showed the same scene 8 or 9 times from different angles and different points of view. And The Leftovers isn't doing that. It's much more functional and less artistic in the delivery. But it is what it reminds
Yeah.
me of. That's like the second or third scene we've got. That's the third time we've got it. Because we got the diner scene with Tom and Jill, multiple points of view. And this is like the third different time we've seen the earthquake. So.
Yeah.
By the way, my favorite scene was. I thought it was beautiful. Tom Shanklin's at the end. Tom Shanklin was the director of this episode. There was this tracking shot where Jill was looking out, just like around at the town, and the entire showed us the entire periphery, like of the Garveys' home. And in that moment, it seemed like anything was possible. I had no idea what we were about to see. I knew the episode was ending, and we were going to see something. And there's this tracking shot of the neighborhood, and I thought maybe we were going to see Evie. I didn't know. Like, I had no idea. And we saw what we saw was another showing of certainty. Little Murphy scraping off the orange sticker. What do you think about as far as the mystery goes? Do you think they are capital D departed?
I don't know. I think that's what I like about this show, because I don't know what the fuck is going on. Which is, that's what's so great about the show. Like, usually, like, when shows don't answer questions, it gets very frustrating. But for
Right.
this show, it's the way, the environment that it provides, it's very good. That I like the way it does it.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that I first of all I agree with you. I have no idea, I'm just guessing. But I'm gonna say that I kind of believe they were taken by some of this cult element because this town seems very concerned with maintaining a certain image, and like all of the fact that the money it that the town sort of produces from being Miracle is tied to a certain like idea of holiness. So I'm gonna think that like this girl flirting in the pool with like random straight out of town strangers and like running these girls running naked through the woods. Like, I'm thinking maybe that has something to do with it. Like, the fact that they were free spirited and not following the rules of the town set forward. And that might be why they got snatched up. But maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense, 'cause especially when we saw how aggressive the outsiders of Miracle are, like the way they bombarded, whatever was left of the lake, and the way they attacked the car, when John and Kevin were driving out. So yeah, I can think about that theory. I think that's a good one.
Do you have a favorite scene from Orange Sticker?
I have to say the favorite scene would probably be the earthquake scene. Nora's whole freak out. It was very well done. I was kind of freaking out where, even though I knew what the fuck already happened. And I was like, oh my god, I need her to calm the fuck down, because this is going to end really bad. But yeah.
Carrie Coon's really great. She's really, really good.
Yeah, it was great.
I think we're pretty much in agreement. I'm going to end with the idea that there are no miracles in Miracle, but that might be true, or it might not be, but there is a miracle sort of with the show, with television, and The Leftovers specifically to me, in that it is revitalized itself by completely relocating and restarting its core characters, which I think a lot of shows that where they're in a position where they're like, we created something good, but it needs something else, there's a problem. I think a lot of shows should look to The Leftovers lead, because to me, season 2 has been vastly superior to season 1 so far.
Yeah.
All right. We will definitely be back with The Leftovers next week. Join us. Next up is Fargo. That was Yama Yama by the Yamasuki Singers, and we're talking Fargo. I have no... that was one of the weirdest music selections of the season, but I liked it. Anyway, this episode was called Waiting for Sisyphus. Or, sorry, The Myth of Sisyphus. Do you know anything about The Myth of Sisyphus, Ash?
Nope. I should start looking shit up.
Yeah. Albert Camus, the French existential writer, wrote an essay called The Myth of Sisyphus, which is basically about the absurdity of seeking meaning in a meaningless world. And I felt that was applicable when Lou took his trip to Fargo. What did you think of Lou's trip to Fargo?
I definitely enjoyed the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was. I just found it. It all interesting in a sense.
Yeah. I thought it was clear from his meetings with both crime syndicates that he was in he's in way over his head right now.
Yeah.
He's a flyweight taking on heavyweights, and I thought it was clearly conveyed that he seems honorable and valiant. Like, dude seems like a badass, and it gave a sense of like the darkness and violence that is going to come. Because that one good man cannot stop all these bad ones. It's just,
yeah.
I will tell you, like, spoiler, you don't know this because you didn't watch season 1. Like, his character is still alive, so Lou's gonna make it, but I think a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
Seems like a safe bet.
A lot of bloodshed.
What did you prefer? Did you prefer the showdown between Lou and the Gerhardts, or between Lou and Mike Milligan and the Kitchen Brothers?
I'm gonna have to go with Mike Milligan on this one.
Okay, why? Tell us why.
I just love Mike Milligan. I love the way the conversation went. Like, it's not something you expect, you know, when you're pointing a gun at somebody. And
you make it sound like a prog rock band.
Everything about that character is just like, he's another character who's just very, way too calm about a situation with, like, people could get shot and killed. Like,
I tell you who he reminds me of. I'm assuming you're familiar with Pulp Fiction, yes?
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of Samuel L. Jackson's character in Pulp Fiction, where he's just like, I hate to disappoint you, but this isn't the first time I've had a gun in my face.
Yeah.
Ain't no big thing. You reach in there and get me my wallet, the one that says bad motherfucker.
motherfucker. yeah, I agree with that. It's like, just calm. It's like, you've been through this type of shit. Like, he doesn't seem to get unnerved. I want to see what unnerves him.
I don't know if we're going to see it. But I love his scene. I thought his scene with Garrett, Robert, with the big guy who runs the Kansas City, Brad Garrett is his name, the guy who runs the Kansas City Crime Syndicate. It was just like this casual way that they sat down and discussed murdering a family over breakfast. And they were talking about, like,
yeah.
the market. Well, if the market calls for it, I mean, it's both disturbing
yeah.
and it's highly metaphorical because, of course, large businesses figuratively kill family
yeah.
businesses all the time, daily. But they don't literally. I don't think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, they don't literally kill them.
I did also like the showdown between Lou and the Gerhardt, so I thought it was
yeah.
a great dramatic tension just piled on where anything could happen, but nothing did. And
yeah.
it carries a lot of dramatic heft because eventually, you know, those characters are going to see each other again. And it's almost like in wrestling
yeah.
when they're setting up a fight and they have like the stare downs in the middle of the ring or like
yeah.
before a boxing match. Like, you know, they're going to eventually fight. So that stare down just builds to the tension for when the violence actually begins. There's just this conflict in the air that violence and tension and uneasiness that many shows don't manage. What do you think of, would you agree with me if I said there's a decent wave of feminism present throughout Fargo?
Yeah, I should say that. Like, it's kind of like empowerment in a sense. Of course, there's sexism as well.
Yeah.
Because, especially considering the time period.
Yeah. And yeah, Dodd Gerhardt is the show's most hateable character because
yeah.
of his inability to accept strong women, including his mother or his daughter. Like, he just
yeah.
has a problem with both of them.
Terrible, but yeah, I can see what argument would be made.
Yeah, I mean, Floyd, the mother, is clearly the most competent and powerful member of the Gerhardts. Lou
yeah.
Silverson's wife basically solved the crime, just sitting up there
yeah.
getting her hair done. And Kirsten Dunst runs her family. And oh, by the way, did you hear? Typewriters aren't just for women anymore. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah,
they are not just for women. I don't know, the dramatic irony, though, in that scene where Lou Silverson's wife solves the crime, but Ted Danson's
yeah.
like, I'm inclined to agree with Peg, or I don't think the motorist would just run over somebody and go home and make dinner.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's delicious. I love that scene. It's great. So much of Fargo works like that, where the least likely thing actually occurs, but because we're in this world where, oh, it's based on a true story, it sort of works. And to some extent, I listened to an interview with Noah Hawley, the showrunner and writer of every episode. He did an interview with Grantland recently, and he basically said the same thing. He was like, I started with just a basic news story, a real news story about 15 years ago,
yeah.
like a woman ran into a guy and didn't stop, just like kept going and then went home and made dinner. And I just thought like that was so weird. And so that's how we started. And like, that's, I think it's interesting to note that like, that's where this story originated from
yeah.
in his mind. It wasn't like the crime syndicates or anything. It was Kirsten Dunst running over somebody and then going home to make dinner.
That's funny.
Yeah. And it is a really, I mean, it takes a different kind of person to just be like, pretend that didn't happen. Like, just leave
yeah.
the guy in the garage.
It's like, oh, and then, like, she took the body with her. That's the weird part. It's like, you didn't just leave it there. I mean, I guess collect evidence, but it was like, it was so clearly wasn't like some.
Well,
oh,
she left
God,
a shoe in
out.
The tree.
Yeah, what's that? But, yeah, she didn't do a thorough job. But I understand being freaked out and, like, you know, just keep going. Like, no, that did not just happen. I'm just going to keep going. But she, like, packed the body and the car and all. I was like, what? and then they wasn't even bothered going to tell her husband that there's a body in the garage.
Yeah. Didn't want him to know. Like, I don't know what she was planning
yeah.
on. The guy wasn't dead yet. I don't know what she was planning on doing. So, Bokeem Woodbine, okay, it's not the most prestigious award, but you can pencil that dude in for best supporting actor in a limited series. Like, done deal. He's winning that Emmy. It's done. Like, there. I mean, who's his competition gonna be? Evan Peters? Don't fucking kid me. Like, that guy's winning that Emmy. Go ahead and get your speech ready, Bokeem. You deserve it.
Jaleesa is not going to be amused.
I'm sorry, okay, Jaleesa, I apologize, but Bokeem Woodbine is, he's working fucking wonders over here. Is the show overusing split screens to you?
No, I don't think it is. I like, because, one, split screens was definitely used a lot in the 70s and stuff like that.
True, that's true.
Especially
It's
like the
time
title.
appropriate.
Yeah, and that's why I guess it doesn't really bother me, because, it is very time appropriate. Just like over opening sequences and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, and one thing Holly said in that same interview is he wanted directors to keep split screens in mind and even try to do them like four at a time when they could, because he wanted to show multiple, which I thought was, I mean, it's sort of a weird thing for that to be a focus on, like, the visual style. But I mean, I think it's working, but I do think maybe, to me personally, and I admire so much of Fargo. I think it's the best show as a series currently going on television. But I think Mr. Robot's the best show on television, but it's not currently going. Less is more. I think it's effective, but I thought it was way more effective in, like, the first couple of episodes. And now that we keep seeing them and keep seeing them, I don't know, it's just sort of losing some of its effect. But I did love the scene where poor Kirsten Dunst's husband, Jesse Plemons, couldn't wreck the car right.
Well, oh gosh. You like you had one job, man. Come on.
He had one job.
One job.
So aliens exist, Ash. I don't have much more to say than they apparently do. There's a third straight episode that make explicit references to aliens. And this one did it more than once. Do you have any idea on why aliens exist?
I don't know if like we if aliens show up, I guess they show up. I don't know
I mean,
what's
this
gonna
is
happen.
such, like, a grounded, gritty, dry series. It, like, everything else in it is so even detail oriented to the time specific, realistic. And then there just happens to be this one thing about a UFO. I love it because it's so fucking weird that you never. What if there was a
It's so out of
What if there
state.
was a UFO on Criminal Minds one week? Was it just me, or did the discussion of, like, talks about clans and loyalties and potentially going to war at the beginning of the episode, did that remind you of, like, a Game of Thrones scene set in 1979, or is that just me?
Yeah, I guess you could say it like that. Well, they wouldn't be eating. Well, they would be eating. Yeah, I
Don't
guess they'll be having.
know. They could eat.
Yeah, I guess they'll. Yeah.
They eat.
Yeah,
Everyone
they
eats.
ate a lot on that show.
Yeah. Including oysters. If I can wait. Did you have a favorite scene or anything? Or first of all, did you have anything else that we didn't need to get to besides a favorite scene?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything for the most part.
Okay.
I say favorite scene. I'll probably go with Lou with the Mike Milligan
Yeah,
scene.
me too.
That scene just it was just so fucking
It was
hilarious the
amazing.
way it was playing out. It was so good. I can't wait for more
Mike
Mike.
Milligan's voice changes tone from one sentence to another, where he's like
Yeah.
this, and then he's like this. It's fucking all.
Yeah.
He pulls it off so perfectly. And his joke about the prog rock band, and Lou slipped in a Yo Mama joke, like, in the middle of the standoff.
Oh yeah.
Like, Lou just slid that one in there. It's like, my man. Yeah, it was tense and funny, but it felt important, just like Fargo itself. I don't know, it was a great scene. I hope we keep getting a lot more of Mike Milligan, and we get a little more of Nick Offerman next week, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
Yep, so next week, Fargo. And for this episode, maybe this episode only, We're going to discuss the premiere of Supergirl, so stay with us. So, Ash, Supergirl debuted this week. What were your initial thoughts on CBS's biggest hit of the year?
I actually kind of liked it. It was a pilot. So I guess, you know, for a pilot, it was really, pretty good. You know, it was pretty decent. I'm not someone who's necessarily big into superhero stuff. Like I didn't read comics and stuff like that. I watch a lot of I don't watch the Arrow and stuff like that. Yeah, and Flash. Yeah. But you know, I thought it was pretty good. So, you know, considering I'm not into superheroes, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I would say a majority of modern comic stories, including Arrow, Daredevil also comes to mind. Almost all of the recent films come to mind. Are sort of cynical and dark, and this is pure unadulterated optimism. She touchingly activates her powers to save her sister's life, and the show just completely ignores the fact that she's had these powers for years and could have been saving lives all along, and it seemingly just chose not to because it would make her life more complicated. Like, that's the kind of, like, non-address that is incredibly optimistic from, like, a point of view of the show. How do you feel about that optimism? Do you prefer this as opposed to, like, the tone and feel? I know you're not big into super. I'm sure you saw it seen, like, The Dark Knight and that sort of gritty, dark superhero tone. Which one do you prefer?
Well, I guess it doesn't bother me. I mean, I guess, you know, I usually like it more gritty, but it doesn't bother me with this character because it fits the character.
Yeah.
You know, it's not out of place. So the optimism, you know.
It doesn't hurt that, you know, Melissa Benoist is really adorable, and it's hard not to want good things to happen. Like, she is, that's the, like, my biggest compliment of the show is that she seems like a good actress, and she's just adorable. Like, I mean, she's not beautiful or hot or anything. She's just really cute. It's like, okay, well, I want her to be happy.
Like, aw, puppies and kittens. Yeah.
It's probably smart to have a fully formed world around Kara from the pilot, because regardless of the ridiculous explanation for why, which we're going to get to in a minute, just like The Flash did, this enables the writers to introduce all sorts of villains with one single explanation. Oh, the Phantom Zone released all the criminals. So we have like 30 criminals that could pop, 50 even, that could pop up in the next few seasons. And we don't have to keep coming up with new explanations. We have the one we already
why
have.
Why they're here.
Yep. But in both tone and quality, you don't watch it, there's very little difference to me between Supergirl and The Flash. Like, they are both really optimistic, special effects driven superheroes, save the world shows. Yeah. And, I mean, they're both okay, and I'm gonna keep watching Supergirl. I don't support us necessarily keep talking about it each week, because it's going to be like, you know, there's going to be very little overarching plot progression from week to week. It's going to be a lot of this villain needs to be defeated this week. Yeah. So fucking Eggs is Jimmy Olsen. You gotta be kidding me.
Yes.
I hated Eggs. I hated Eggs. I like the guy. The actor seemed a lot more likable as Jimmy Olsen, because Jimmy Olsen's likable, but I fucking hated Eggs. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, the actor who played Jimmy Olsen played a character named Eggs on True Blood, who was just, he was the worst.
the character wasn't really thought out much on True Blood, but I love his voice. Like, his voice is, like, just deep for no reason. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, I don't ever remember in my... I have some other problems. This isn't really one of them, but I don't think I've ever seen Jimmy Olsen being portrayed as, like, that, like, handsome and tall and...
Yeah.
You know, but why is he, quote-unquote, expanding his horizons by leaving Metropolis? Does that make any sense?
I don't know.
I'm gonna branch out and leave New York City in Superman. Like, what?
I don't know. I guess, you know, Superman just wanted to use him as a way to, you know, push his cousin. Even though
yeah, give
Hercules,
his cousin that. Just like The Rock wants to help Roman Reigns out.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I got to give you a little push, you know, to do great things. You need a little boost.
Like, of course it would be better if the series could use Superman and Batman. Like, of course that would be better. But yeah. It's very interesting to basically have a female Superman. Because as I'm going to discuss in just a second, this is not the traditional representation of Supergirl. So this is basically a female Superman, isolated, and this becomes basically Superwoman. And you can tell all the same stories you could with the serialized Superman show, but now it's a woman, and I think that's what CBS is hoping for. And I think that'll be fine. I do. I mean, and we need a female superhero on TV. We have Jessica Jones coming up soon, who is way cooler than Supergirl.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Let's talk about the ridiculous opening. We got to talk about it. I am 99.99% sure it is non-canonical that Kryptonians were aware of what their powers would be on Earth or what effect the yellow sun would have. So Kara, like, embracing her superhero destiny before she ever sent off to Earth was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. And,
it also seemed really simplistic, like a piece of exposition, just to like explain to anybody who may have never seen Superman that why Kryptonians have superpowers because of the yellow sun. And it was also, just to set Candace straight, Kara traditionally began using her powers and operating at Supergirl while she was like in 8th or 9th grade. So this is something else. This is just like their own version of it. The only reason I can think for this change is to make a more direct parallel to Superman. So that, like I said, she can basically be Superman just as a woman. She even has Jimmy Olsen. She should have a boyfriend named, like, Larry Lane.
Larry Lane. Lois Lane's cousin.
Yep. Keep it in the family.
Right?
I think if you like the pilot, I think you're probably going to like the show. I think it was an accurate representation of what it's going to be. Yeah. You have anything else?
No, not really. The boss is a bitch. Actually, I like the sister.
I like the... Kalissa Flockhart, I thought she was good. I mean, she's a bitch, but I thought she was good.
No, I didn't think she was bad, but she was a bitch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was supposed to be. She was like that. Yeah. Like that was basically her title. When she got her script, it said "bitch" right there.
Yeah, right. That's just the description. Yeah. High-powered bitch.
Yeah. My favorite scene was probably, I guess, when Kara decides to save her sister, because even though it's shortly into the show, it's a fairly touching moment. Mostly because, as I mentioned, like the show's really just optimistic on how and Sunnyside and. And Melissa Benoist is really cute, so, yeah.
I'll probably have to go, that's my favorite scene, too. It was funny while I was watching it. I was just thinking, like, when the sister saw her, through the window, like, if that was me trying to, like, sit in plane, I saw my sister, I would have just been yelling at her through the screen, like, bitch, don't ever fucking scare me like this again. It's like, that was, like, my thought. It was like, because that's a terrifying thing when you think about, like, you're watching the news and a plane's about to crash and you realize someone you care about is, like, your family is on that plane and you can't do anything.
Well, we couldn't do anything, but, of course, Supergirl can. Alright, so, soapbox time, Ash. You warned me that you might have something to talk about in regards to The Walking Dead.
Oh, gosh. Last Sunday was fucking hell. You guys, any fucking Walking Dead fan? It appears, although, you know, at this point, I don't think it's true that, you know, the character Glenn may be dead. Rick the fucking part. But, you know, I don't think he is. You know, I did a reaction video for anybody who cares.
Tell them where to find that.
Shit. I didn't write this down.
Come on, Ash.
I know. I failed. YouTube.com/ Ashley, that's Ashley with two E's, 92490. I'm pretty sure that's it.
If it's not, just check back next week and maybe she'll figure
yeah.
it out.
But no, it was a really good episode. It was a big episode for the character Michonne, who was my favorite. They might have killed my second favorite character, Glenn, but I don't think he's dead. We'll probably find out like in a couple weeks that he slid under the dumpster. We're all hoping for it. But yeah, there's a fucking giant herd still fucking coming towards
us. That's a weird like, thing to say. He probably slid under the dumpster. We're all hoping for it. Okay. As somebody who doesn't watch the show, that was just like an interesting comment.
Yeah, that's such a random thing. Like, what? Dumpster?
We've all been hoping this motherfucker would go under the dumpster.
But yeah, big episode for my character, Michonne. It may be hinting for, you know, Rick and Michonne may be getting together, so I'm hoping for that. But, yeah.
Joni loves Chachi.
And yeah, there's a giant fucking... Oh, I'm mad at Daryl for ditching Sasha and Abraham. Fuck Daryl. But,
Daryl's
yeah,
like the only one I know.
Gosh. I like Daryl, but I haven't really been feeling him for the past couple seasons. You know, he hasn't been doing shit, to be honest. I'm probably going to get some hate for that, but I don't care. But like I said, yeah, giant herd still coming. Rick is about to be surrounded, and while he's stuck in the RV, that can't get moved because he got shot up. So, yeah, and I think that's episode, supposed to be a 90-minute episode, or supposed to be, I guess, a flashback episode for the character Morgan and his journey since season 3 that we haven't seen. So, yeah.
That's you. All right, I want to say that next week, I want to do, that we are probably going to include a very short, like, 10-minute micropod previewing, November. There are a few shows coming out in November that are at least worth mentioning and talking about, even if we don't cover them on this show. And I'll spend the rest of my short little soapbox time talking about Zola, the stripper from... I don't remember where she was originally from, but she went to Florida. And if you know the story of Zola, you know what's up. She taught the world what trap phones are, and she told us all the dangers of being a sex worker. I just want to be, like, serious for a minute. The girl who wrote that Twitter story, if you don't know what I'm talking about, please look it up. Zola the stripper. Pretty sure if you just, like, Google that, you'll figure it out. She wrote like a 200-tweet story, supposedly real, about herself and another girl going to Florida and her finding out that the girl was a hooker and then the girl getting kidnapped and like her pimp killing a guy and then getting arrested for human trafficking. Like, it. People had all sorts of comments about it, but mostly like either, oh, how sad or oh, how funny, which. I mean,
yeah,
and both are true to some extent, but my reaction was like, that girl can write. Like, I just sat down and read for like 20 minutes this ridiculously like ebonic story about hookers in Florida, and I was fucking fascinated. Like, whoever this person is that wrote this story is a really good writer, and she should spend some time writing and not yeah. hooking. So that's what I'm going with. It has character development. It has building of tension. Like when you are taught to write narrative stories in high school, this is what you're supposed to be writing. Maybe with less drugs and sex, but you know, basically that. That'll do it for this week. Remember, guys, if you're still with us, leave us a comment. Tell us what your favorite section was. Tell us what your least favorite was. Tell us any feedback. We would love to have it. And we really appreciate you for listening. I'm sorry, Julissa. Bokeem Woodbine is going to win that Emmy. All right, Ash. We also want to encourage you to check out our Buffy Pod, Your Childhood Trauma. We post it every week along with You're Damn Right. So, I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And we're out.